What is up, everyone? Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast with my co-host, Evan Demerle. On today's show, it's all questions all about Darius Garland, sent in by you, the listener. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in, at least in audio form, is from Asteroid. Check them out on Spotify or Apple Music. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs for places like Diamond Up Rocks and Estimations for the Sword. Evan, my partner in crime here, is over at Facebook's Write Down Euclid primarily. And we want to thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first to listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcast. Evan, are you ready to take some questions?
I sure am.
Let's do it. All right. First one comes from Icy Okoro on Twitter, who asks, do you see DG becoming a 50-40-90 type of player? So I think type of player is doing important work in that question, because I think in case people are wondering,
it's a unique club.
Yeah. Saying type of player, but my point is type of player means he's going to flirt with it. You can be that type of efficiency. Let's just remember that there's only 11 NBA seasons ever that are 50-40-90. Bird did it twice. Mark Price did it. Reggie Miller did it. Nash did it four times. Dirk did it. Durant did it once. Curry did it once. Brogdon did it once. Kyrie is the most recent person to do it in 2020, 2021 in 54 games. The lowest number of games, by the way, any player has done a 50-40-90 season, for those wondering at home. Quinn Cook did it in the G League once, and Elena Deladon did it once in the WNBA. It is very rare to do this, but type of player, yeah, like I think that is the type of efficiency we're going to see from Darius as he, I think, continues to go. I don't know exactly where it ends up. I don't know if he'll ever actually do this, but he's that type of efficient player, I think, from what we've seen so far.
Yeah, and I think if you want to categorize Darius, I think his absolute, like, apex, like, he is hitting at his 99th percentile. It was like a Steve Nash, like a Mark Price, where he's hyper-efficient, is the engine of the offense, really gets his bigs and everybody else involved, is also just killing it from three and from the line. But the problem is Darius doesn't have enough opportunities to get to the line. Listen to yesterday's episode if you want to get in more detail about that, because Chris and I kind of talk about how he just isn't wired that way, and maybe he needs to kind of find ways to get to the line more frequently, a la Dame Lillard, just because he's not like Ja Morant. He's not like his own teammate Colin Sexton. But Chris and I were kind of talking about it before the show even started, that I think not just Darius, but Colin as well, could be a player where they are efficient. They get to the line more often. They can just make the most of their opportunities. Like Chris said, it's a rarefied company to be in that category. Would I be surprised to see him flirting with that someday? No, I don't see it happening next season, though, just because there's adjustments the Cavs need to make internally offensively to kind of figure out where they're at still. Because there's a lot of just variables and questions about what will happen this offseason with this team to kind of figure out where they're at. But it's definitely a unique scenario. But yeah, I could see it happening. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. But at the same time, it's hard. It's hard to be that efficient across the board. And for Darius, there might be nights he can't be, and it kind of just skews that a little bit. But I just wouldn't be surprised. Long answer short.
Yeah, last year his numbers, 46% from the field, 38% from three, and 89% from the line. So, like, he is, and he's gone up every year, at least in field goal percentage. You would need to see him, I think, make, like, his threes just being something that went at a high rate to kind of boost those numbers would be good. I'd be curious to see, like, what, if he ever were able to pull it off, like, what it would most resemble. Because, like, the Steph one is sort of the most insane one, because he took 886 threes and shot 45%
of
those
Steph
threes.
Yeah, I mean, Steph Curry it is like such an outlier, and it's so unfair sometimes to compare like players
that's not what I was doing. What I'm saying is that like what his model
no, I know mean, you're not, but yeah. I'm saying like if you try to peg Darius in like the same category as Steph, that's unfair.
Yeah,
that's
what, like, I was saying. My point is that like the Steph 50-40-90 is literally one of one, because he shot the ball 1,500, almost basically 1,600 times, 886 of those were threes. and he made 45% of them. That's insane. That's even insane. KD took 1,400 shots in his one, and only 334 of them were threes when he did it in 2012-2013. So, like, I don't know what, like, the model of his would almost be. Like, it almost – there's not, like, a one in the recent memory. And there's only been three since 2010, and that's Durant, Curry, Brogdon, Irving. And then Quinn Cook again did it in 2017-18 in the G League. So, like
– two former Cavs or Cavs affiliates right there.
Yeah, well, Cook did play for the Cavs and everything. So
we did with the Charge, didn't he?
Yes, but I'm saying he also did play with the Cavs. He obviously was not.
Yeah, that's okay. Okay, yet. I thought you said he did the 50-49 at the Cavs. I'm like, no, he did. Maybe a lot more notable.
No, but I'm saying he played with the Cavs. And if he, if, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. And like,
yeah.
But I wonder what it would look like to see like him do it. I guess I wonder if he's also I think at the right type of game for that. So let's keep an eye on that. See how more efficient he gets going forward. Okay, let's go to another question here. This one comes from Dave GT5 on Twitter. This question asks us, better fit next to Garland long-term, Ochi Agbaji, a lethal outside with good off-ball movement, or Dyson Daniels, a big playmaking guard who takes some of the burden off of Garland to create and score more off-ball? Evan, which of those would you prefer?
Dyson Daniels, just because I think if you have somebody in the backcourt who can allow, because Darius is kind of scary off the ball because he's pretty good off the ball. Like the Cavs have tried to use sets of him off the ball with like maybe Rondo initiating, Rubio initiating, LeVert initiating at times just when he was healthy. I think Rubio is where you really saw it work because Rubio just has a pulse for the Cavs offense when he was healthy. But like Darius off the ball is really lethal. And if you have a bigger guard who can, in my mind, play defense as well to maybe mitigate some of Darius's defensive deficiencies at times, I think that's more effective. And I think you can get that with Ochai right away, but I think Ochai or Okai, however you pronounce it, I have to learn it still.
I believe it's Ochai Agbaji. Tomorrow's show is all about the draft. We talked about him, and I had a phonetic... Well, I went down a YouTube rabbit hole of trying to like hear someone, as many people as possible, pronounce his name. And I believe it is Ochai Agbaji.
I'm going to learn it, but I will take your word for it. Like, Ochai has a pre-built skill set, but his ceiling is a lot more limited as well. Like, he can give you that right out of the box, but there's only so much he can give you. Where Daniels, like, I like his upside, and I like the intrigue with him, but the only issue is, like, if the Cavs had the luxury of being able to develop him and let him grow, they don't because they're kind of now a playoff team and they don't really have time to wait for one of the draft picks to get it together. I'd prefer Daniels, just long story short. But what would be your preferred pick?
I have, like, a hard time, like, saying, like, definitively which
like, kind both of players are good next to Darius, but, like, it's...
They kind of need both things, I think, is the thing.
And does Daniels project as a plus shooter?
I don't know. I haven't done the Dyson Daniels.
I haven't done the Dyson Daniels breakdown, but if he projects as a plus shooter, like I said, if the Cavs have the luxury of player development time, which they don't right now, yeah, you take Dyson Daniels because that's everything you want in a player next to Darius Garland. But out of the box, Agbaji is a better option just right now in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Cleveland is, you know, A, be continuing trying to develop, I think, as much going forward. I think, like, the archetype of player that is almost sort of perfect in this way as a secondary creator that's a little bigger, can play defense and can shoot, is, like, the Desmond Bain type. Is really, I think, if you're saying, like, that type of player would be kind of it. But so, like, yeah. Can Dyson Daniels be, like, a version of that? Can Agbaji, you know, maybe be a version of that? Or like, a more off-ball shooter version of that? Like, I mean, you don't even need the guy to be, like, the best, maybe the highest three-point percentage shooter in the league like Bane was this year. Like, you just need someone to, I think, just juice things a little bit. And look, I think as the Cavs go forward, if you're looking at not even next year, but years past, like, I think trying to find versions of these guys via, you know, second-round picks, late first-round picks, developing them in the G League is going to be one of the things that sustains what this is. I mean, I think if you look at what Boston has done, some of the teams that have been really successful, it's just a situation where I think they have been able to keep developing these kind of guys and fill them in spots when the other guys get really expensive because you're going to be paying a lot of money to your core, and then how you kind of navigate that is kind of interesting. Okay, after the break, we're going to take some more Darius Garland questions.
Okay, on the Dyson Daniels thing. I just pulled him up on KOC's big board, and he calls him a subpar shooter who only made 29% of his threes and 53% of his free throws, and he's not a plus shooter. It's just long story short, where he has like a bit of Kyle Anderson vibes because of that.
Yeah.
Or even so, Evan Turner as well, just like a playmaking guard/forward.
Yeah, so take a what you will. But after the break, we're going to take some more questions. We're going to spend actually the whole one answering one question about a player option and a possible Darius Garland extension. But first, going to tell everyone about our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season. Be sure to check out BetOnline for the latest odds on each and every playoff game. There's some big ones obviously coming up with the NBA on Thursday, including Game 6 between Phoenix and New Orleans as Devin Booker perhaps returns. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. For example, over in NBA Draft World, Auburn's Jabari Smith is currently the favorite to be number one overall at minus 125. Chet Holmgren is plus 215. And Duke's Paolo Banchero is plus 325. We'll see how that shifts in the lead up to the draft as well, I'm sure. And we'll see how the lottery shakes out and affects that too. But check out BetOnline. That's betonline.net. And remember, that is BetOnline. And that is where the game starts. All right, back here on the Lockdown Cavs podcast. I'm Chris. That's Evan. Thank you, by the way, for making Lockdown Cavs your first listen. For your next listen, check out the Lockdown Now podcast, nightly recaps of every NBA game with analysis from local experts. It's free and available wherever you get your podcast. All right, our next question is all about Darius Garland's possible contract extension that he is eligible for this summer. This is from at SD. I think there's a swear in his username, doesn't agree, but it's Cavs Fan for Life on Twitter. Is his name on there. Brian Windhorst mentioned that the biggest sticking point on Garland's next contract would be the fifth-year player option. What are your thoughts on this, and would you care either way if you wanted one? I will say this. I have not heard Windy say this. I don't want to speak to the veracity of that. I don't want to, like, say Windy said XYZ because I don't know that to be true. What I will say is that, I think if you look at, like, recent history and some of these contracts, it can be kind of hard for these guys in these situations to get the player option. It's also something that they usually don't try to do. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is probably the one that really sticks out in recent memory. So he got a 30% escalator clause that would turn a guaranteed five-year $172 million base into $207 million should SGA be voted into one of the three all-NBA teams. That deal had no termination option. I also get why Garland would want one. I also just don't know if you throw all this money at him and you give him the max amount of money, if he's going to would kind of turn all that down just to over a player option. I just don't know how likely it is. And I poked this around hypotheticals, threw it at some people. That was the feedback got to, that it's kind of rare for a guy to get a player option on this kind of contract.
Yeah, it is certainly odd. I think Darius and SGA having the same agent maybe lets you bring it into consideration a little bit, but I agree with Chris. I just think if you're the Cavs, you offer Darius the max, or I don't think he qualifies for Supermax like Ja Morant does.
I don't think Shai's clutch.
I think Shai's clutch.
I'm looking this up. You keep talking. I don't think he's clutch. Evan, I need you to keep talking. I'm going to look this up.
I know, but I'm just thinking as I talk here.
Yeah, he's a Wasserman client. He's not clutch. He's Wasserman.
My bad. But either way,
He's in the same agency as Evan Mobley.
Interesting. So maybe Evan Mobley will have a weird structured contract at the time, but I think if you're the Cavs, you offer Darius the max, and if you're Darius Garland, who has made it clear, like, hey, this is my team, I want to be a part of this, like, he's big on the culture, he's big on what the Cavs are building because he's a big proponent of it. Like, Kobe Altman has said this, had given him the same lip service, saying, like, oh, Darius Garland's been phenomenal. He told me when I asked him, like, do you think he's elite? He said, absolutely, he's, like, an elite-level player. Like, there's a lot of just pleasantries being exchanged back and forth, and now it's just up to Rich Paul, his agent, in the Cavs front office, who have a really good working relationship, let's be frank, at this point, to kind of just bang out the details of a contract. And I think, I don't know what he qualifies for. He hasn't won any awards or gotten any All-NBA honors, so he's not going to get like a super max contract offer from the Cavs, but he's going to get as close to the max as possible. Probably will be the five-year max. It'll be one of those slots the Cavs lock up using Garland, and Evan Mobley will probably be the other one when he's extension eligible as well. And they just move forward with that because he has proven more than enough that he is your franchise point guard. He is the face of the franchise, if not one of the franchise's best players, especially on offense. And you need to reward this. He's an all-star. He more or less pushed you guys offensively to a winning season and almost within the playoffs, but there wasn't enough support to kind of get him there. And he could maybe take a pay cut if he wants to support the team, but his extension doesn't kick in this summer. It kicks in the following summer. So it's not really something to worry about now. But yeah, if you're the Cavs, you're offering the max. And I think Darius will just accept that because, one, he wants to be here, and two, guaranteed money means more than a player option. And I think, like, yeah, I'm a proponent of player choice and people having the freedom of playing where they want because this is where you work. But at the same time, like, there's also uncertainty with that. And if there's guaranteed money, at least you know, like, you have money at the end of the day that you'll be for sure getting. And, like, a team won't be as quick to ship you off either because of that option.
Yeah, when I see player option in this situation, I just wonder if it's like, hey, give me the most amount of money possible so I don't get annoyed about this not having a player option. I think it is like, this is what the money is for, like the Mad Men thing when Don Draper's like yelling at Peggy Olson in that show, just being like, this is what that's what the money's for. Like, that's what the money's for. So you don't get the player option. I think I would just be surprised also, if he doesn't,
like,
if he gets
it's one. It Oklahoma make, City is like really tempting Shea to say like, hey, do you want to stay here? Because let's be frank, Oklahoma City's not a glamour market. And yes, they have an over, neither is Clay. That's what I'm saying. Like, Cleveland really doesn't want to tempt Darius to say like, hey, do you want to stay here? Because like, things suck. You don't want to give Darius the out. Like, he's contractually obligated to play for your team at that point. Like, he is bound to you versus giving him a player option where, yeah, be financially responsible for him to step away from that and maybe test the waters of free agency, just depending on the situation and things. And I'm not saying they're going to be like a Russell Westbrook or a John Wall situation where they're expected to pick up their player options this offseason and like strap the Rock. Well, the Rockets don't care. The Lakers will be strapped for cash when it comes to Westbrook. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a part of these negotiations. I'm also not a multimillionaire who wants to maybe guarantee generational wealth or maybe have the option to choose where I play in my prime or when I hit my apex. But if it was me and I was being offered more money than I'll probably ever be able to comprehend in my life, I would get as much guaranteed as possible. I'd get a front-loaded contract and let that sucker just decline over 5 years.
I think what likely happens is he gets the pretty standard max rookie contract and it goes up percentages every year, and he gets the 30% kicker if he makes an All-NBA team. I think that's probably where this is. This
that's
is
just realistic.
Wait, if I want to just to
so answer like, the it's, so it's starting at like 30-ish million and then it just slowly goes up. Yeah, that's realistic.
Shea's year one next year starts at 30.5, so Garland will be like a little more than like him and Ja are basically going to get largely the same contract and structure and everything. Yeah. Hey, Evan, I just want to ask just because this was part of the
Ja
question.
Qualifies for the Supermax, I think.
I don't Memphis. No, you can't get a. I don't believe you can get a Supermax off of your rookie contract.
I thought Giannis got one off his rookie contract.
No, I'm pretty sure he did not. I don't think you get the Supermax off your rookie contract. But I think the other part is does it matter either way?
No, it's just a maximum rookie skill contract. You are correct. With a
you're 0 for 2, Evan. 0 for 2.
I know. I'm having a bad week. I literally said when I logged off today at work, fuck me, it's Wednesday, because I thought it was Thursday. So
the thing about this is that if you're the Cavs, I think you just say, here's the money. I think it's like understandable to want one. But I also think the trend we've seen with players of late is that you take all the guaranteed money. And then if things go badly in 3 years or like you want out in 3 years, you just say, I would like to be traded, please. And then you still have your money. Like, that's sort of where we've seen this sort of go, which I think makes sense. Okay. After the break, we're going to answer some more questions. We're going to talk about what a leap to Garland superstar status would look like and some more. But first, Evan, why don't you tell everyone about Rock Auto?
Absolutely. Today's episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why there are often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions that wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and if you want to check them out, go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car, truck, vehicle, you name it. Right, Locked On, and their How Did You Hear About Us box, they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at rockauto.com.
Evan once, by the way, saved a bunch of money at Rock Auto. You've got some air conditioner parts. Came through clean.
I replaced, no, not just parts. I replaced the entire AC system. It would have cost me almost $2,000 if they ordered the parts. Rock Auto saved me about $1,200. They really do save you money. And, like, it's Prime-esque, their shipping. It shows up within less than 2 days.
Love to see it. All right, back here in Locked On Cavs. Last segment. Evan, I'm going to throw one in here real quick just because I got it over text and I forgot to put it in the outline, so I apologize. But Kevin Stankiewicz, friend of the pod, asked...
Oh, Kevin Stankiewicz.
He's a good human being. It's a legitimate question.
He's a great, I know, he's a good human. Kevin...
The reason that I don't like cars.
Does his question stank, or is it...
No.
No.
That's... You need to go on time out. You're lucky for you. This is the last time we have to record this week. I'm really happy for your braid that you get to like reset. You get to just decompress for a couple days until like Sunday.
Brother, I need like a month in a cryogenesis chamber, like DBZ, just completely revitalizing my brain. I'm just fried. I don't know what's wrong with me.
So he asked, what would an improvement for Darius Garland on defense? Like what would like you look for as improvement?
That's a good question. Because yeah. I thought it was going to be an offense question. Like, well, we just talked about this yesterday.
No, I think the answer is basically like, can he maybe have to use less energy in offense because the rest of the offense doesn't stink? And then he gets just like that helps him be more like quality in that. And just because maybe his gas tank isn't so burned out by what he has to do on offense.
See, it's tricky because I go back to the Dyson Daniels question about putting a bigger guard next to Garland. Like you kind of tested it a bit with Okoro last year, where you put a plus defender next to Darius to kind of mitigate his defensive deficiencies because you're asking so much out of him on offense, that I agree. I think if the offense is a little less poopy next year, it's going to allow him to save some gas in the tank. I think if Colin Sexton's back making a huge impact, I think Caris LeVert's comfortable. I think if you're able to maybe pry one of the Bogdanoviches, whether it's from Atlanta or Utah, like that's going to make his life easier too, just in terms of having a shooting threat on the floor next to him. I think if you get an additional shot creator, it makes it easier. Like the Cavs can make moves to relieve Darius's energy issues on offense, just expending so much on offense. Because then I agree, he can provide a little bit more effort on defense because he's not a bad positional defender. Like he can stay in front of his opponent sometimes. It's just teams will force him into the switch because he lacks the lateral quickness, and I think maybe his little more energy in the tank, he can have a little bit more active hands, which is where he really makes an impact.
Yeah, I think the size is always going to be a thing, and I would have again like to see this in the
meet say like you can't playoffs. Physically he's not Gumby, you can't stretch out his arms or make him taller.
Yeah, but he's not like Trae Young small where he can just get like wrecked. So like how much can he hang? How much can he, would a little muscle help? These are questions.
That's the other point too. Like we talked about this yesterday. I think if he maybe adds not a ton of muscle, like he doesn't have like a Colin Sexton plate push growth spurt, like muscle gain.
I would be down for like team him, Okoro. Okoro absolutely is a plate pushing psychopath, I'm sure.
I think if Darius was built sturdier than a brick shit house, it would really affect his shooting mechanics.
No, but
if
he adds like
5-10 pounds of muscle.
But it isn't like you go run around pushing some plates and you like suddenly you're jacked like that. Like
while wearing the dog chain around your neck to strengthen your neck muscles too. But oh my
God.
Brought to you by Jerry, the Gallery of Jewelry or whatever the hell. Yeah, but if he has like 5-10-ish pounds of muscle, like lean muscle, like just is stronger, bigger, sturdier, can kind of take hits just on screens and switches and things like that, that's also going to be beneficial for him defensively. But I think just to answer Kevin's question, because that is a good question, how he can get better, I think a lot of it is on the Cavs, but I think him working the summer, maybe physically adapting his body to the grind of an 82-game season is going to help make him better, not on just offense, but defensively as well. And just you hope it balances out a little bit too, just because Cleveland's dynamic and systems and everything else just around that makes it a little easier.
Yes. All right. This comes from at Chris Does Cavs, not me, on Twitter. This person has Dylan Windler with the chain in his thing, which is funny. What would another leap look like for DG? He's already reached an incredible point, but what would he have to do to truly cement himself into superstar status? Evan, you take that one first.
I think he was kind of flirting with that towards the end of the season just because he was raising the potential. Like, no disrespect, like I always say, Moses Brown is like my example. We made Moses Brown look like a rotational player. He makes undrafted free agents like Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade, who are both solid players in their own right, and I think they are solid pieces that could stick with the Cavs long term, Darius makes them look better and makes them kind of levels up their game a little bit. Ditto for Evan Mobley. I think Evan Mobley just looks so comfortable because he has a competent point guard. I know Lauri Markkanen's agent said that Lauri was so excited to play in Cleveland because he finally has a point guard with him in Darius Garland. So I think Darius's ability to maximize his teammates' potential and kind of make everybody on the floor better is what gets you in the superstar category. I'm not saying he's going to be like Chris Paul, where Chris Paul is just a menace on both ends of the floor, but he could have a similar impact in that regard, where you plug him into a lineup and he'll know how to move the chess pieces, now know how to tell people where to be at, kind of get people the shots, get them in the right spots, and make the offense flow and make things easier. And again, I think him learning what the grind of an 82-game season truly is and trying to fight for the playoffs truly is will show him how to expend his energy in the right way and maximize practices, recovery, things like that, to make sure that he can continue to his trajectory towards being more of an elite player and possibly a superstar, as you asked your question.
I think the other part of this is, like, can he sustain a certain level of play for multiple seasons? I think that would be the telling.
That's a good point too, because I asked JB about that, like, right around the All-Star break. Like, were you guys just feeling a little burnt out? And he's like, no, we're not. I'm like, but you look like you're burnt out. And I think part of it's learning the grind.
They lie. I mean, like, lying is maybe being aggressive.
No coach is ever going to say, yeah, we're tired as shit. And we look like dog shit out there. But, yeah, I think them maybe learning in real time, like, how tough this is beneficial as well. And go ahead with your point. Sorry.
No, but so if Darius this year 68 games, maybe plays like 75 the next couple years on average, you know, averages 20 and like 9 assists a game, like continues at high usage, high assist rate, you know, improves in some other areas. We see him kind of still add some improvements on the side, but this is like the baseline of what he is for ages like 22 to 28. Then that's the kind of guy that's like, okay, this is an all-star year after year. This is a guy that is going to be one of the best players in the East for that stretch of time. Like, that's what you're looking at. You want to see if this year was the start of him hitting like a pretty sustained peak where it's 22 and for however long he can sustain this for, or is this like a year three peak and he's going to kind of come back down to earth a little bit. I think I tend to think that that is more likely than not, but let's just remember, like, year one for him was kind of like a weird year and it didn't quite feel like he ever really got his footing in a lot of ways. He averaged like 5 more points a game in year two. And then he took even more substantially from year two to year three this year. In year three this year, he was like the best player on the team for most of the year. And like that leap, if he can sustain that level of play and be that quality of player for, like, again, several years, that would say a lot to me. If we, like, next year he hits this same level and to some, at least, or close to it, and is, you know, adds a little more to his game to some degree, because like he has gotten better every year, and I want, if that continues, that would be I think pretty telling to me. Evan, let's end on this. This is a very silly question, but it's a good question because it comes from a friend of the pod, Ed Carroll at Revelator34 on Twitter. He just wants to know, and as far as Darius goes, and I feel like this question, honestly, no, I apologize to you. I feel like this one's more like a Chris question than an Evan question. But
it is 100% is. Okay. But I have an answer. Don't worry.
Okay. Yeah. No. So I'm gonna put a time limit on myself because no one needs a long list of quilically this. But yes, what do we think Darius Garland's favorite X-Men is? Who the X-Men that best represents him is, and the best X-Men teammate for him is. So you go first, then I'm gonna put a timer on myself.
I think he's like Magneto because Darius Garland is Neato. Go ahead.
Okay.
Put your timer on.
All right. We're going to stopwatch. We're going to go. I get myself 40. I'm going to give myself 60 seconds. Okay. I think
to be specific, either iteration of Magneto. I watched the movies.
And the cartoon, but the comics Magneto is the best Magneto, just so we're clear.
I don't know if Darius Garland's a Holocaust survivor, but
we'll cross that bridge and come to it. I mean, he's not. That would be weird. Okay. The answer is Betsy Braddock, the current Captain Britain, because it's not necessarily the character that is the most powerful, but is the character that has done everything asked of them and has responded and is taking on large burdens and is succeeding with them. Go read Knights of X. Came out today. It's really good. Secondly, the best person to pair him with, I think you'd want to do, like, I think his favorite, I don't want to speak to like what who he is a person because I know him, so I'm not going to answer that one. I always did think it was weird that when they did the graphic of him, they put him in Gambit. Like, that's just like a weird vibe. Like, Darius doesn't strike me as necessarily like a Gambit, like the Moshiri, like the very like womanizing Gambit from the cartoon, you know?
Chris, how did you
Kev's, I think the guy you want to, the teammate you want to put him with.
The SeatGeek promotion.
What?
How do you feel about the SeatGeek, the Avengers SeatGeek promotion?
JB Bickerstaff is Nick Fury, weird stuff. You want to put Garland with someone like Storm, like ultra powerful, like a Magneto, like someone that can just like wreck shit because he's going to make them better. So that's my answer. And I did it in a minute five. So I'm pretty proud of myself. Evan, any final thoughts?
Did you say Magneto as well?
No.
I completely just went on autopilot as you talked about this.
I know.
You think about the Howard the Duck comic you bought me. And I was like, that's a good comic.
That's right. Read House of X, Powers of 10 by Jonathan Hickman, Pepe Larraz and Arby Silva, and you'll understand why the X-Men fucking rock. But
I think their need is just, it seems like a lot to tackle.
They're all a lot. It's
like
all
I want to read Moon Knight because I think the show is kind of interesting.
Brother,
I feel like some fans aren't too happy with what they've done with the character either.
As someone who just went back and read for the first time some of the very old Moon Knight stuff, the changes are kind of good because some of the stuff in the early comic is a little dicey.
Problematic.
There's literally like warnings on the Marvel Unlimited app for some of the Moon Knight stuff. But all right, that's going to be it. Any final Darius Garland thoughts this week, Evan? This is our Garland week. We're going to go Evan Mobley next. I'm sure we'll talk about Garland again some point in the context of these various weeks and things we have coming on. But any final Garland thoughts as we wrap up Garland week?
No, he's a superstar. I think there's certain members of the Cavs fandom who were pissing and moaning that the Cavs were winning games with him, but he's really fucking good. Like, long story short, like, he is the straw that serves the drink for the Cavs. This is the leap we expected and hoped from him. Maybe not to this level, but we expected some type of growth. And now that we're heading into an offseason where there's not as much uncertainty about him, I feel like the Cavs are in a really good place going forward.
Yeah, his breakout year, I think, is, along with Mobley, along with the ascension of the team in a lot of ways, I think was the story of last season. And it felt right to do our first week focus on a player with him. Again, we're not going to do this for every player. I think the three that are locks are Mobley, Garland, who we've just obviously did, and Jared Allen. And then we'll kind of figure out the rest as we go forward here in the offseason. Up tomorrow on Locked On Cavs, Richard Stamen from the NBA Draft Big Board show is coming through. I talked with him about Johnny Davis. I talked with him about Ochai Ajabi and talked to him about what it means for the Cavs to have the 14th pick. And then I already booked him. Evan, this is breaking news to you. I let him pick a prospect when he comes back on that we have to talk about because he wanted to make sure we talk about it. He picked Nikola Jovic, and I thought that was interesting.
Well, I mean, Nikola Jokic is making a lot of money right now for the Nuggets, and I don't really know how the Cavs can make that work financially, but hey, if you want to play Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Nikola Jokic together, let's do it. I'm just joking. Jovic seems interesting.
Yeah, he's 10th on Richard's board, and
that sparks interest for me, too, because I was looking at his board. He's kind of like between 10 and 15 or 20, like 10 to the middle of the first round range for a lot of folks, and I think he could have a lot of potential if the Cavs have the patience to let him season.
Yes. All right. Now, if you want a great second listen today, check out Locked On NBA. From the first jump ball of the play-in tournament to the last possession of the finals, Locked On experts take you deep inside the playoffs with insight and analysis affecting all 30 teams. I suspect tomorrow they'll be talking about Devin Booker and his possible return from a hamstring injury for Game 6, and as well as what's coming in the series I can't wait for, Boston and Milwaukee, now that it looks like Milwaukee's going to end Chicago's night here and season on April 27th. But until next time, I'm Chris. I'll be back tomorrow with Richard. Evan will be back on Monday when we kick off Evan Mobley Week. If you have Mobley questions, you want to start getting them in now, lockdowncavs@gmail.com is the way to do it. And until next time, be well. And
it's my name week, baby. I'll be so sharp for Evan Mobley Week, folks. Prioritize your mental health. That's all I'm going to say, folks. Just to make time for you. I'm going to go do that this next few days. Take a nice fat nap and just sleep and read later.